This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 56 of The Bugle for the week beginning Monday, the 15th of December, 2008, with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in London and in New York City. It's Mr. John Oliver.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Buglers. I might have to apologise for my voice a little bit today. It's a mixture of exhaustion at the end of a busy year, an oncoming cold and karaoke.
Oh, dear. Two of those are at least partially excusable.
It's giving my voice a rasping quality, which I think is very sexy, though, Andy.
Really, John? I'm not feeling that yet, but...
Not yet.
Right.
Well, I'm not saying anything seductive yet. I'm just sounding tired.
Right.
It was our office Christmas party last night. It was Rob Riggle's last day. No, he's probably the most manly man I've ever met. Present company very much included there, Andy.
What do you mean? I benched 350.
You don't even know what that means.
Good point.
In tribute, I serenaded him on karaoke with the song Wind Beneath My Wings, and I think he was simultaneously both moved and provoked. It's like a lion who comes up to you and places its head on your shoulder, but knows that it retains the ability to kill you. So we haven't really had a Bugle office party, though, have we?
Yeah, we've not had a Bugle office party, John, but we're still trying to find a venue that is equidistant between London and New York that isn't in the sea.
What's the situation regarding the new miniature Zaltzman?
Well,
Andy, because there was talk of this Bugle with you being really in a hospital car park.
Yes, I could easily have been holding a pair of forceps and a tranquilizer gun, but I haven't. I know you often start these Bugles, John, with stories of who you've met this week. Well, I'll tell you who I haven't met this week: my new son and/or daughter. So there is no baby Zaltzman yet, at least not that my wife has told me about. Although, for all I know, she could have had it already and just be wandering around with a space hopper stuffed up her jumper just to spite me. Women, eh?
Stop non-name-dropping, Andy.
I had my Andy Zaltzman Incorporated office party, which involved me and my wife going out for lunch. So it was pretty raucous.
Yeah, did it get a bit out of hand?
It kicked off.
Did you photocopy your nudges?
Well, no, not this time, but I did have them painted. But, you know, I'm more of a traditionalist in that regard. It was sort of like an 18th century themed office party. So, I mean, what do you think we should do for the Bugle office party, John?
It's hard to say, isn't it? I guess like a meal somewhere, followed by a kind of a two-man riot in the streets.
Right.
Maybe we should get into a physical fist fight.
Sounding like an ordinary day to me.
Oh, yeah, well, you live hard, Andy, that's always been said.
Live hard, die hard. Or at least, well, I do the latter part of that at my gigs. Anyway, this is the Bugle for the week beginning the 15th of December, which means it is 500 years ago this month, John, since Michelangelo began work on the Sistine Chapel, as covered in Bugle 34 in the Mickey Paintbrush story. This week, ironically, John, exactly 500 years since that moment 500 years ago, a man called Dave began painting our spare room. And isn't it quirky how history repeats on itself?
Does Dave have the same kind of ambition?
I don't think so. You know, he's a solid workman. He's doing an excellent job within the rather restrictive parameters that we've set him.
Are you saying just paint it all bone?
Basically, yeah. I don't know. I don't get the feeling that he's bursting to be more creative. But, outstanding performer, Dave. But anyway, even more importantly than Mickey Paintbrush getting stuck into the Sistine in 1508, on Saturday the 13th, John, it was 5 years since Al-Qaeda Chief Operations Officer Saddam Hussein was captured in exile in Iraq. And the 6'2" Islamic fundamentalist and part-time warlord is still awaiting trial in Guantanamo Bay today. I'm confused. I'm very confused.
Well, it's a dramatic week for you, Andy. Cut yourself some slack there.
As always, some sections of the Bugle go straight in the bin. This week, a fast food section. Because the year 2008, John, means just one thing to food lovers: that it's 50 years since the invention of instant noodles and 25 years since McDonald's developed the Chicken McNugget. To commemorate the former, here is an audio instant joke. Now, if you put your MP3 player or stereo in boiling water and stir it and play that joke again, I think you'll find it's a pretty witty quip about why I am like a large piece of furniture made out of a crocodile. By which I mean I'm a snappy dresser.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, I'm...
But you'd only hear that if you've doused your...
Also, you know, just point of interest there, Andy. McDonald's did not invent the chicken nugget. It evolved.
Well, you say that, John. To mark the launch of the McNuggets here and in this section in the bin, we will be looking back on the life and times of the man who inspired this culinary revolution. Franco Luigi Chickens McNugget, the Italo-Scottish gangster who used to threaten rival mobsters all the way from Palermo to John O'Groats by leaving breaded chicken testicles on their pillows. Also in the fast food section, after allegations that British chain Toasty Woof Woof has been serving whole newborn Dachshund puppies in its hyper-realistic superior range of hot dogs, we investigate what really goes into your snack. Is that lettuce in your burger or the severed wings of fairies' fetuses? It's lettuce, but the fact that I even had to ask that question means that the answer is irrelevant. They might as well call it the Tinkerbell Burger. Also in the bin, an audio skiing section in which John and I will be speaking specially loudly so you can hear it whilst plummeting downhill at 100 kilometres an hour towards a tree. And we look at the role of snow in the history of skiing. Would it be such a popular winter activity if snow did not exist? Plus, we look at which of the great composers from history would have made good ski jumpers. The following would have been good: Mendelssohn, Rimsky-Korsakov, Schubert, and Purcell. And the worst would have been Beethoven. Because he was deaf, he couldn't have heard the ground approaching.
Top story this week, and world-class corruption, Andy. An incredible story of corruption came out of Illinois this week. And this is even impressive by Illinois standards, the state that made it possible for Al Capone to live out the Italian-American dream. This story concerns Rod Blagojevich, the Democratic governor of Illinois, a state so riddled with corruption that the FBI agent in charge of the investigation said during the press conference, "If it isn't the most corrupt state in the US, it's certainly one hell of a competitor." But you may well say, "Oh, you know, it's not that impressive then. He's governor of Illinois. Of course he's corrupt." I would just say, think of the number of corrupt people he must have beaten to become governor. This guy's the best of the best, or indeed the worst of the worst, depending on how you look at it. Andy, I don't say this lightly. This is corruption on a Berlusconian scale.
Wow. Big words, John. Big words.
I don't bandy that around. Let's remember that Silvio remains the standard by which other political crooks will be judged. He's the high watermark for weasels. I'm going to go even further, Andy. Blagojevich is the Plaxico Perez of politics. And I can't think of higher praise than that.
Well, it's alleged that he tried to sell Obama's old Senate seat. And I want to ask, John, is there anything really wrong with that? I mean, do we want capitalism or not? I mean, surely it's all or nothing. Blagojevich is merely trying to stop communism sneaking back in whilst capitalism is going through its little spell.
Well, is there anything wrong with it? I mean, I guess it means legally or morally, to which both of those, the answer is yes.
Well, you say that, John, but, you know, in the transcripts, Blagojevich said that the seat was, quote, a valuable thing. You don't just give it away for nothing. And I think it's good to see someone prizing democracy so highly.
That's right, but come on, Andy, you know, that could mean anything. You could take anything entirely in context and make it look badly. But the White House also picked up Blagojevich apparently being annoyed at Obama's assumption that this transition of power might be able to not involve the exchange of money or favours. And he said of him, "Give this motherfucker his senator, him, for nothing, him." Ouch, Andy. I'm guessing a pardon is out of the question now. Besides, that's president, motherfucker, to you. Show some respect. If that phrase rings a bell, Andy, that may be because "give this motherfucker the presidency, him" was one of Hillary Clinton's most popular campaign bumper stickers.
I guess that was inevitable, though. This is Barack Obama's old Senate seat. And, you know, ever since the election, the market for Obama memorabilia is skyrocketing. So, you know, it's understandable that he thinks he can make a tidy profit. I mean, everything, you know, even the little pencil that he used to write his first speech as a 6-year-old Obama to a classroom full of inspired classmates, Yes, old MacDonald had a farm, and we must strive to ensure that he is able to keep that farm as long as he wants to. And we must give old MacDonald the help and advice to make his farm a more secure and profitable business. Perhaps old MacDonald himself would like to reassess the counterproductive diversity of his livestock and poultry portfolio. But anyway, with individuals like old MacDonald and the greater public of America working together for our common good, unified by a belief in freedom and sound agricultural principles, children, we can create a nursery rhyme we can believe in.
With a moo-moo here. Blagojevich has faced allegations of misconduct and ethical violations almost since the first day he was elected, after campaigning on a promise to, what else, clean up government in Illinois.
To be You've fair got to him, say, you have to say that, though.
You have to. But, and also, to be fair to him, he did wink whenever he said that and had mentioned that he was running an ironic campaign, but I think voters just failed to pick up on his signals.
Well, that's like, you know, at the start of a court case. You know, everyone always says the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And we all know no one means it.
Among the many, many charges being laid against him are conspiracy to commit fraud and solicitation to commit bribery, which include him trying to shake down a children's hospital for campaign contributions. He threatened to cut off funding to a children's hospital. Not even a normal hospital, a hospital for children. Anyone can shake down a hospital, Andy. I've done it myself. I'm sure you have too. But a children's hospital, that requires an almost inhuman lack of conscience. When you have a conscience that small, you're basically a cat. But the allegation that really got him into trouble was, as you mentioned, that he was essentially trying to sell the Senate seat, which has now been vacated by Obama, to the highest bidder. And how do you even make money from something like that, Andy? It's an open Senate seat, not a Mercedes. You can't just place it on a garage forecourt and say, this is an absolutely beautiful Senate seat. Real steel, this one. Only gently used by a politician with national ambitions who used it when he wasn't on a campaign trail. What can I do to put you in this Senate seat today? Just sit in it. Sit in it. Try it out. See how it feels. Oh, you look terrific.
It's ergonomic. This is, of course, John, only one side of the story that you're giving here. And if I may just give the other side of the story from Blagojevich's own website, which, surprisingly, and in contrast to, for example, the US and world media and also the rest of the internet, is not actually leading with the news of his arrest and the charges he faces. In fact, the two top items on his website 2 hours ago, before I came in for recording, Governor Blagojevich meets with laid-off workers protesting at Republic windows and doors. He says he's showing solidarity and stressing the importance of protecting workers' rights. And also, Governor launches annual Keep Kids Warm and Safe campaign. So let's focus on the positives, John.
Just not healthy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, why must we always focus on the bad things, like allegedly trying to profit from illegally selling a Senate seat, and not on all the children he's kept warm and safe? What a cynical world we live in.
OK, well, let's do that. Let's talk about the more positive sides to this man. Yeah. One, he has the most incredible hair. It looks bulletproof. If you fired a gun at it, you wouldn't even bend a follicle. It's so magnificent. It's dangerous. It's the kind of hair which people follow. It's a hypnotic hairdo. If you gaze into it, you can see your own soul. I'm not exaggerating, Andy. He can probably use that hair as currency in jail.
But as always, sport has in fact led the way in satirising the situation. According to the Associated Press, John, minor league ice hockey stars the Las Vegas Wranglers are going to wear black and white striped prison-style uniforms at one of their forthcoming games. We'll also feature on their shirts spoof prison-issue numbers on their jerseys with the letters ILLGOV, as in Illinois Governor, before the player's regular number. They're also going to auction a top-of-the-range seat at one of their games to the highest bidder. Take that, Blagojevich! Lampooned by an ice hockey team. And not just any ice hockey team, John. An ice hockey team from Las Vegas. An ice hockey team in a desert. A team that has lampooned nature itself simply by existing.
I think we should take them on, Andy, as the Bugles ice hockey team.
Yeah.
The Bugles' favourite ice hockey team.
Wranglers till I die.
What's even more incredible, Andy, is that the day before this story broke, the previous day, Blagojevich was asked about the rumour that he was being bugged and was about to be charged, and he said this: I should say, if anybody wants to take my conversations, go right ahead. Feel free to do it. I appreciate anybody who wants to take me openly and notoriously, and those who feel like they want to sneakily wear taping devices, I'd remind them that it kind of smells like Nixon and Watergate. But I don't care whether you take me privately or publicly, I can tell you that whatever I say is always lawful, and the things I'm interested in are always lawful. Andy, he's mad! He's out of his mind, or he has no short-term memory whatsoever. He's essentially a goldfish. Or, perhaps he just forgot to say, you can absolutely take me, starting now. From now on, nothing illegal, from now. I can only hope you weren't taping over the last couple of weeks, because, well, never mind. The point is, from now, we're all agreed.
British news now, and Northern Irish artist Michael Stone is facing 16 years in jail after an ambitious piece of performance art was drastically misinterpreted by the judicial system as an ambitious piece of attempted murder. Stone, whose previous portfolio of works includes Loyalist Killings, numbers 1, 2 and 3, and Paramilitary, an autobiographical self-installation piece involving 20 years of violence and terror, was convicted for his controversial November 2006 work, Storming Stormont, in which he attempted to burst into the Parliament buildings in Stormont, carrying a gun, a knife and a bomb with the intention of artistically bumping off Sinn Féin leaders Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness. Well, John, I just think it's a sad day when society prizes art so little
that
an innovator like Stone is hauled up in front of the beaks. I mean, this is censorship of the worst kind.
Well, this surely is as well, Andy, one of the great terrorist offences, to essentially try and kill two people and then say, oh, it was supposed to be performance art. It is frankly disappointing that we're not seeing anything that imaginative down in Guantanamo. And it just goes to show what we had with the Irish Troubles, Andy. Joni Mitchell was right. You really don't know what you've got till it's gone.
The judge said that Stone's defence that his actions were a comic parody was, quotes, hopelessly unconvincing and self-contradictory. One-star review, John.
Of all the things you can say about Michael Stone, what you can't say is that he isn't entertaining in court. Because he has really brought something to the table there. Again, you know, he's seen there's a big credit crunch. And he thought, like Plaxico, how can I entertain? What can I, terrorist Michael Stone, do?
This has to go down as one of the great excuses in criminal history, along with Jack the Ripper, when he said it was for a school science project. What are you saying? I was supposed to dissect a gerbil? Oh, my mistake. Lee Harvey Oswald's, just saw a wasp on the president's neck and I was trying to shoot it off in case it stung him. And O.J. Simpson's, I'm O.J., you know, the ex-football star. Used to be in a few films. Ah, jeez.
Great O.J. impression, Andy.
Thanks, mate. I've been working
Boy,
on it.
You just nailed him there.
I've spent a whole week in an American football helmet just to try and get in the part.
Well, you could tell, Andy. That was time well spent. And British Barack Obama news now. Andy, the Supreme Court in the US threw out an appeal that Barack Obama is, in fact, too British to become President of the United States. Now, there's good and bad news there. The good news is that that means that he's just British enough. But the bad news is that they insist that he's not actually British at all. And this case stems from the fact that Obama's father was born in Kenya at a point when it was under British rule. Happy days, Andy. Oh, such happy days. For the Brits, not so much for the Kenyans. Therefore, his father had a British passport, and the appeal claims that this meant that Obama was born a British citizen. That means he's ours, Andy.
Yeah.
This means we either take him and he becomes Prime Minister of Britain, or it means that we now control America again.
Bingo.
What's it to be, Yankees? Make your choice.
According to British law at the time, which is an odd way to decide these things. He is British. He is British. No matter where he was born, the fact that he had a British-owned father, essentially, means that he belongs to the Queen. The question that I need to ask, John, though, is how can anyone be too British to be president? I mean, surely America should want someone who is as British as possible. Those are all the qualities you want in a president. You want someone with the great British virtues like talking English, wearing clothes and using napkins. Yep. And that is what you need in a president. They should be disqualifying people from not being British enough. The claim about Obama was brought by a man called Leo D'Onofrio, who is both a lawyer and a professional gambler He was essentially a constitutional fundamentalist. He also wanted to McCain to be disqualified because he was not technically born on American soil. He was born in Panama whilst his father was doing something hugely un-American, I believe serving in the American armed forces. but technically, according to the Constitution, D'Onofrio said that neither Obama nor McCain was therefore eligible. You've got to be born on US soil. He means actual soil. You've got to plop out into a bit of proper stars and stripes embossed mud and be caked in American earth for the first hour of your life to be eligible to be president, preferably in the exact geographical centre of mainland USA. It's a very odd term, this natural-born citizen, John. I don't know, do you consider yourself a natural-born Brit?
Well, I mean, I don't really know what that means.
No, but it's a very odd, a natural-born citizen. I remember when Matilda was born, John, almost 2 years ago now, roughly what happened was Miranda was kind of going... and all of a sudden...
that is a rough interpretation.
So, yeah, so it's all the wailing and
I'll put that line up there with your OJ impression, Randy.
Yeah.
It's two very idiosyncratic impressions. Well, like, I do OJ or childbirth. Which do you want to hear?
So it was, yeah, basically...
Could you do OJ giving birth, Andy? Could you do that now? Go on, do that. OJ giving birth to a child.
I'm OJ Simpson. You know... So anyway, so roughly what has happened? If we go back to the natural-born citizen joke, was congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Altman. You've got a beautiful baby citizen. Oh, thank God, I said to Miranda. I really wanted a natural-born citizen to save money on expensive surgery later. But this guy's clearly an absolute nutter, John. He said, this is from his original application to the courts. Senator John McCain is an American patriot who has valiantly suffered more for his country than most of us ever will. He has shown bravery beyond that which the country has any right to ask, and it is with very deep and sincere regret that I respectfully request that this honourable court order the secretaries of the several states to remove McCain's name from the ballots.
Very deep, very sincere.
You know, if he could do anything else, I'd let him stay on.
Hands are tied. I'm mad, you see. They're tied by madness.
They're tied by the Constitution, John. He continues in his blog, I couldn't have shown the candidates any more respect, but both of them should have known that if either were to become president, despite the loyalty they have for this country... Now, this is where it gets interesting. The dam would be broken and the waters of foreign influence would be forever capable of drowning our national sovereignty and placing our military in the hands of enemies from within. Now... This, John, is where he crossed the line from constitutional pedant to institutionable penis.
Did he write this down, Andy, or did he shout this at traffic?
I don't know, but if he shouted it at traffic, someone wrote it down and put it up on his website as a blog.
More British influence news now, and Canada. A Canada news would normally be nothing more, Andy, than a weather forecast of still cold, but not this week. Not this week, Andy. There was chaos in the Great White North, in a country that usually takes pride in how stable it is. Things have got so bad up there that there are rumours that some households in downtown Toronto have even been locking their front doors at night.
Holy
Canada,
bananas.
Canada truly is on the brink. Andy, gangs of people waving hockey sticks are marauding through the streets. The only thing preventing complete societal breakdown is the fact that it's so cold there that if you stay outside for longer than 20 minutes, you freeze to death. Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who was re-elected just 2 months ago, was facing a vote of no confidence that he was almost certain to lose. So he asked the Governor-General, who represents the Queen of England...
Yay!
The Queen, the biggest queue there is, to suspend Parliament until the 26th of January. Who knew, Andy, the Queen was still so involved? She runs that joint.
Well, I'll answer your question, who knew that Britain was still so involved? And I would imagine that the Queen didn't even know that.
What are you asking me for? It does seem disappointing that a supposedly independent country would go running to mommy the second that things start getting tough. They're like one of those creepy 11-year-old kids who's still breastfeeding.
And in other British news, the display of tobacco in shops is to be banned in England and Wales under government plans. There have been a lot of complaints, John, that this is another example of the nanny state. But it would be quite a bad and inconsistent nanny, John, that wouldn't let your children see cigarette packets, but would thrust in their little faces cheap whiskey, processed cheese, pornography and birthday cards. People are asking, is this the government's responsibility to hide cigarettes behind the counter? Well, I guess the government will say, well, it's determined to cut smoking further in its battle against cancer and gravelly singing voices. And by pretending that cigarettes don't exist, it's kind of, you know, the kind of low-level hide-and-seek that you play with two-year-olds, and that's basically how the government treats its subjects. Maybe this will help, but will it work, John? Well, smokers so far have not been put off smoking by, for example, the prospect of years of ill health followed by a slow and agonising death. So having to ask for cigarettes without being able to point at the exact packet they want is not going to prove to be an insurmountable obstacle. The government's planned further measures to dissuade people from smoking, including smearing all cigarettes in the mucus of emphysema sufferers, legally obliging shopkeepers to punch customers in the face whenever they buy cigarettes, keeping all cigarettes in a pit of poisonous snakes, having crack teams of police liaison officers with loudhailers to try to talk smokers who look like they're about to buy cigarettes out of doing it, and also fitting shops with an alarm which, when a customer asks for cigarettes, plays a siren and the words, "Paedophile alert." Because, John, anything that adds to the difficulty and stigma of buying cigarettes has to be good for this nation. That's what the government thinks. Who am I to argue with it? They should have the balls to go through with it to its logical conclusion. Your emails now, and, well, thank you very much for all your suggestions for what I should call my child. Some outstanding suggestions, I have to say. This came from Catherine Blackley in Ithaca, New York. Andy should look to the periodic table of elements when naming his son or daughter. There are a lot of great options for boys. My favourites are strontium, calcium and xenon.
Oh, nice.
A girl
very
could
nice.
Be chlorine. Not sure about that.
No, she couldn't.
Or oxygen.
Matt Kendrick from Arizona said, Andy's baby should be named Guy, Jean-Paul, Gilbert, Anne-Marie, Eve, Napoleon, Balzac, Zaltzman. Because, as established in the very first fact off of the Bugle, Andy is a flaming Frenchie. You are a flaming Frenchie, Andy. Right up there with the greatest flaming Frenchie, Joan of Arc. There's one here from Nick Filardi, who he suggests King Arthur Zaltzman. When you see this on a resume, you can't help but think, he led the Knight of the Round Table, he can sure as shit manage my grocery store. Optimus Prime Zaltzman, a good alternative to King Arthur for a girl. Optimus Prime Zaltzman would be good. Or Hella Zaltzman. When people see him, they'll think, wow, that's one Hella Zaltzman.
This one comes from David Parr, who writes, Sir Andy and Duke Oliver. Well, I think you've been overpromoted. Anyway, he writes, how about Plaxico, I'm already liking this, Hardthwick Obama Norbert Zaltzman. His initials would therefore be Fonz, the same as the world's greatest Jewish superhero, Fonz from TV's Happy Days. Plaxico was suggested by a couple of people. It's going to be hard to turn that down, Plaxico.
Yeah. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Graham Anthony Trudeau writes, Andy's baby should be called Pachinko, and goes on to say, ultimately, I need the name for my hedgehog, so I will likely name it after Andy's baby, one of the suggested names. Your baby might already have some influence in the world.
Really?
There's a hedgehog somewhere who's just waiting for him or her to be born.
Well, that's interesting, because we wrote a list of names, as you do.
Yeah.
And on that list of boys' names was Spike, which would be quite a good name for a hedgehog. So.
Excellent. He signs off, Andy, by saying, here's hoping your newborn doesn't pee in your face. Thank you, Matt. That's a lovely thing to say. Thank you to Matt, Andy.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to know that I have the support of all buglers around the world for not getting urine in my face.
I have to say, Matt, although, you know, I respect your right to say that, I disagree. I hope Andy's newborn does pee in his face, because it's classic slapstick.
What black and white movies have you been watching, John? I'm not sure that was supposed to be slapstick.
Tom Mulderig says, hello, Andy, but not John. In this context, I understand that, and I accept it. He said, I would like to friendly suggest to you, Andy, that the name for your incoming offspring should be Zemstvo Zaltzman, after the short-lived form of local government implemented in Tsarist Russia from 1863 to 1917.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
There you go.
In history. Yeah.
You got the alliteration, as he goes on to say. Good alliteration for that. Zemstvo Zaltzman.
Yep. Well, that's kind of appropriate, because it was, of course, the threat of Russia that, in many ways, partially prompted my Lithuanian grandfather to up sticks and leave to South Africa in the 1920s, I think.
Actually, he makes some very strong arguments for this. Saying, first off, with Zemstvo Zaltzman, you've got the alliteration in there without having to name your child something ridiculous like Zebedee or Zebra.
Good
so
point.
That's good.
Good point.
That's good. And it goes on to say, here's a final thought. Have you ever heard of a tyrant or evil dictator that was called Zemstvo? I suppose you could argue that means we're due for one, but I prefer to go by the statistics. Good point, Tom. He says, name your child Zemstvo Zaltzman and no one gets hurt.
That's an unusual form of threat.
Hard to argue with that.
And this one comes from Stephanie Cohan, who writes, I've concluded the best name for your child is Waltzing. Not only is it gender neutral, but Waltzing Zaltzman is a fine rhyme scheme. But most of all, you have the added bonus of dedicating both of your children's names to the unofficial Australian national anthem. Should the two ever visit the land down under together, the fame of Waltzing and Matilda Zaltzman is assured. What names could better commemorate a hobo nicking a sheep and drowning himself to evade capture? Yours bugly, Stephanie Cohan in upstate New York. P.S. And John, I don't know how to tell you this, but it's your website. It's passed on. Did you know this? There are rumours it's died of neglect. Us buglers had a memorial service and remember the site not as it is, but as it used to be.
Oh, rest in peace. In ones and zeros.
You loved that website, didn't you?
I did. I raised it like it was my own, which it was.
That bodes badly if you ever have children. You're going to get someone else to do a bit of work on it when it's a week old. And then forget about it until it's dead.
It's just old-fashioned parenting, isn't it?
Good enough for the Victorians, it should be good enough now.
Exactly!
So, thanks for your suggestions for what to call my child. As I said last week, though, I'm the winner of this competition. Well, my wife and I are the winners of this competition.
Steady, Andy, steady. Bad instinct there.
And we'll reveal the winning name.
That's right, we.
Either next week or in a subsequent Bugle. So thanks very much for all your emails. Do keep them cascading in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. We still haven't done the hotties from history roundup we've been promising for about the last 4 weeks. So we'll do it next week.
We'll do it before the year is out.
Well, which year, we don't know. A quick sports section now, and, well, history is beckoning once again.
Careful.
It happened this time last year with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, we got excited, though, and they let us down, Andy.
They were about to go through the whole season without registering a win. Immortality was within their incompetent grasp, and they fumbled it in a typical Miami Dolphins way. And this year, I don't even want to mention the name of the team that could do it, John.
There is a team that are looking at zero wins in a season, and they are from a state which really cannot catch a break at the moment. The football team really are the bellwether for how that state is doing this year. I will simply say good luck to the Lions. And when I say good luck...
You've said it now, John.
I just think there's no point winning one game. You deserve to have that record.
Also in sports, the BBC Sports Personality of the Year will have happened on Saturday, tomorrow as we record. And surely, John, Plaxico Burress must have it sewn up like a successful appendectomy patient.
It's a fix. It's a fix if he hasn't got it.
I mean, I know he's not qualified because he's not a British sports player.
Rubbish.
But even so...
Rubbish. He transcends national boundaries, Andy. What he did was for all of us, for America.
Yeah, people have won all kinds of Olympics, but not many people have shot themselves in the leg for the greater good of humanity.
That's right. It's Plaxico's to lose. It will be, I'm telling you, there'll be riots in the street if he doesn't win that.
There's been quite a lot of debates, John, about who deserves to win here. We've got Lewis Hamilton, obviously Formula One champion. Why not, John?
Plaxico, Andy. I'm sorry, I insist it has to be him. He deserves it.
I think you and me are in a minority of two in hoping that Plaxico Burress walks off with the BBC Sports Personality of the Year. But people have been complaining about Hamilton, he only won because he got such a good car. But then you could say Chris Hoy only won three Olympic cycling golds because he's got a bicycle.
Yeah, would Michael Johnson have been the 400-metre runner he was without his special legs?
That's right. Would Andy Murray have been so successful without being Scottish and therefore fired by the injustices of history? Hey, Tom? Freedom! Foot fault. F*** you! And finally, the Bugle forecast. Well, it's the same forecast as last week. By this time next week... Well, I have a child.
Yeah, I think so, Andy.
You think it's coming
for yes this week. I think it's coming. And I actually think it'll be before Friday. I think you'll be back next Friday.
Back next Friday. Baby in hand.
With a baby.
Come hell or high water, somehow I will get another... If it's mine or someone else's, I will be in the studio with a baby next Friday.
Bye!
In fact, if she goes into labour next Friday, this studio is kitted out with a delivery suite. I could just shout over the noise.
That could be the greatest podcast in history and the loudest.
Hello, buglers. Ring, ding, 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 ding. Bye-bye, buglers.
Bye-bye, buglers, and good luck, Andy.
Thanks, dog. Thanks.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.